going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Live on DAZN Worldwide.
Saudi Arabia.
Saturday, May 3rd, 7 p.m. Eastern. Canelo versus Skull. The King stakes his legacy once more for the undisputed crown. Standing in his way is Warrior Skull, undefeated and poised to decimate the division on a knockout weekend of boxing.
Let's make history.
Get Canelo versus Skull, Saturday, May 3rd, 7 p.m. Eastern, live exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com.
Here we go. 8 seconds. Halliburton against Giannis. Halliburton,
got it in!
He put it in! 1 3/10!
There's no timeout.
No timeouts for the Bucks!
And that is the voice of Chris Denari, the Indiana Pacers home announcer, who called the frenetic finish of the Pacers-Bucks Game 5 on Tuesday night. And this is the Sports Media Watch podcast. I'm John Lewis, joined as always by Armand Brody. Please subscribe to the SNW podcast feed on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and more. So why am I opening the podcast with a local call from the NBA playoffs? Well, because Tuesday was one of the last times you will ever have a local call of the NBA playoffs. This NBA playoffs is obviously, as we all know, the last NBA playoffs of the media rights deal that was struck in 2002 and renewed in 2007 and 2014. As part of the new deal that begins next season, every single NBA playoff game will air exclusively on national TV. And so there's a lot of convenience to this for a lot of viewers, because let's be realistic. FanDuel Sports Network Indiana, which is where the Pacers play, or FanDuel Sports Network Wisconsin, or any of the FanDuel Sports Network RSNs, which used to be known as Valley Sports and Fox Sports before it, these are not easy to access in market. And that means that people who live in and around Indiana, live in and around Milwaukee, found themselves in a circumstance where it was more difficult to watch their own team play than it was to watch other teams in other markets on TNT. So obviously, moving away from RSNs is convenient from that perspective. But there's some downsides too. And obviously, when it comes down to your local announcers, you're talking about people who follow the team all season, know the rhythms of the club, and they're going to be shut out of the NBA playoffs entirely. Already, they only do the first round, but they're going to be shut out entirely as part of this new deal. And Armand, I'll bring you in on that note.
One of the first things I thought about was Mike Breen, who had made some comments about how sad it was that this transition was about to take place. And I also thought about Walt Frazier, who is, I think, 80 years old and has been a part of MSG Network broadcast forever. Obviously, a legendary New York Knick in his own right. There is something to be said about the connection the fans have to their announcers. And you see this really in baseball and basketball. There's something about connecting with your announcers, and the fans are going to lose that. Now, the networks are overjoyed because more money in this new deal and more eyeballs on ESPN and, of course, NBC, Peacock, etc. But there is a connection, something to be said. To me, I look at it as more of the traditions, more of the things we've gotten used to in sports media going away. And I can't help but think about the fans. Growing up, I was a huge Atlanta Braves fan. My entire family was. And as great as John Miller and Joe Morgan were for Sunday Night Baseball, there was still something about hearing Skip Carey and Pete Van Wieren for me that allowed me to make a connection. And so the fans are going to lose that. But as you said, John, this entire RSN model, this entire RSN outlook has been broken for some time. And the rubber sort of is meeting the role now, but I can't help but think about the connection that the fans lose to their announcers, those announcers sort of being the voice of the fans during those playoff contests that are now going to be going to the fully national broadcast.
Well, yeah. And I mean, let's think about what the national broadcast entails, right? I mean, certainly the game analysts are usually pretty good at knowing what they're talking about. But, you know, you go to the studio, you've got a guy in Shaq who didn't know who the coach of the Pistons was at midseason, right? And said they were boring and that they were, what was it, five games under 500? You know, there's an element of the national announcers, especially on the studio side, kind of not necessarily following the whole league. And so that is definitely something that you lose.
You're right about that. And one of the things I'm thinking about Joe Buck did that I really thought was a smart move when he popped in for that MLB game, the Brewers and the Yankees, he said, I want the fans to be able to hear their guy. So he gets a former Yankee in Joe Girardi. He gets a current Brewers analyst in Bill Schroeder or Schrader to do the analysis, gets one analyst representing each team to try and get as full a picture of the broadcast as possible. And I thought it was a really smart move. And it's something that fans have complained about for ages and ages and ages. The regular season is here and you spend all your time, if you're Milwaukee, you spend all your time with Lisa Byington. You spend all your time, if you're a Pacers fan, with Chris Denari and Quinn Buckner. You spend all your time with these people. And then out of nowhere, April, May comes along, and these are people who are not as connected. The best they can do is cram and sort of rely on notes that they've gathered throughout the course of the season. But if you've never done, if you haven't done a Pacers game the entire year, you're not going to have that connection. You're not going to have the depth of knowledge that those other broadcasters who have actually been there day in and day out have. So you do lose something. Now, if the broadcaster is good enough, and the national ones are, you can still, of course, have a wonderful broadcast, very professional sound, and weave in all the notes and nuggets that that you need. But there's something about having your own voices there that really allows the fans to make that connection, and that's what they're going to lose.
Yeah. And, you know, you talk about the national announcers, some of them are just local announcers moonlighting, right? Like Matt Devlin, who called that game between Milwaukee and Indiana for NBA TV. I mean, how much could he focus on the Bucks and Pacers when he was doing the Raptors all season long?
Right.
So, you know, but let's talk about why this is happening. This is happening because exclusivity matters in sports TV, especially in these media rights deals that are so lucrative. You know, it is a noted disadvantage for TNT and ESPN. Now, ESPN obviously gets exclusive windows on ABC that then they can pair with the ESPN cable number, and they can issue a very flattering, and I'm not saying it's not accurate, but certainly a much more flattering number than if they were just issuing the ESPN-only figure. TNT doesn't have that option. ESPN and TNT, once you get to round two, have exclusivity all the way through. And so it's just for the first round. But, you know, that's a whole round of playoffs, 2 weeks of games where you're side by side. In the regular season, the biggest games on TNT are all exclusive. They get exclusivity for opening night. They get it for, you know, games like Celtics-Lakers, you know, Warriors-Lakers. The coexists are a level below. But in the first round of the playoffs, the coexists are all you get. So obviously the NBA, you know, trying to maximize this TV revenue, get to that $75 billion figure, probably easier to do that staying to, you know, Amazon and Peacock especially, because they're direct to subscriber. Let me just circle back a little bit and say, when it comes to deciding between one cable network, which is your RSN, and another cable network, which is TNT or ESPN, it's a matter of preference. But given a choice between a cable network you already have in your RSN and signing up for a streaming service, you're going to pick your RSN. It was really a matter of necessity to give Amazon and Peacock full exclusivity in this deal. Nobody was going to, if they have access to their RSNs, which obviously they don't often have, but nobody with access to an RSN was going to sign up for a service.
You know, you make a good point because, and it's similar to a conversation we've had. The fans do not want to work hard, John, to find their games. They don't. And if you've got a familiar RSN that's within your cable bundle, you've had it for 15, 20, 25 years, because it is a part of the fabric of your local feel, the vibes you have, the good feelings you have towards a particular team, and then you lose that, there is the possibility, I would say, of you saying, you know what, to heck with it. I don't want to go searching for Amazon. I don't have $14.99 that I want to kick out for Amazon each and every month. I want my games the way I had them because the way I had them worked for me. And I do think there's the possibility, like as you said, of fans just sort of living without some of those games that they would normally watch under the circumstances we're in right now.
The other side of it is that after last night, there's no more NBA playoff games on NBA TV. NBA TV has been airing playoff games for 22 years. I don't really know if that was ever intended to be the case, because if you go back and you read the accounts of when the NBA reached this media rights deal in 2002, there was supposed to be some AOL sports network. I don't know what this was going to end up being. It was going to be an AOL sports network, and the number of games on this AOL sports network eerily close to the number of games that air on NBA TV. And I suspect that the AOL thing fell apart and the NBA ended up putting those games on its own channel. That's one. The other aspect is that when the NBA deal was struck in 2002, the first round was best of five. And by the time the deal went into effect, the league at midseason in 2002-03 expanded the first round to best of seven, creating extra inventory that was not accounted for by ESPN or Turner. So I don't know that NBA TV was ever supposed to have playoff games when this deal was struck, but they got them and they've aired them for, again, 22 straight years. Every year of the playoffs, the NBA TV games are the ones that you know are the least desirable. What's the NBA TV series going to be? What's interesting to me is one year, the LeBron-era Heat had a game on NBA TV against Milwaukee. The Brandon Jennings Bucks were such an anti-draw that even the LeBron-era Heat ended up on NBA TV. I don't think the Lakers ever played a single playoff game on NBA TV. In fact, I know they didn't. It was always the series that indicated who the league thought would get the least juice in the ratings.
You would think that a network, the league network, would resonate more in the minds of fans in the playoffs. You would think that, but it's always been weird. And even when NBA TV years and years ago, because remember, it took a long time for them to start using national broadcast teams. They were airing the games on NBA TV, but they were using the local feeds. So you would get maybe an Indiana-Philly playoff game, and it would be just the Philly crew. So you take a local announced team, and you're presenting a game that's supposed to have a national presentation with a local flair. It's always been weird, John, and it took a long time for NBA, I remember articles written complaining about the fact that there was no national presentation, unbiased, objective announcers, an actual network production team. I remember articles about the fact that that was not the case for NBA TV. So just, it's a strange relationship. A strange dilemma for fans, a strange situation. It just never felt right to me. And there was always, you always knew where the NBA was buttering its bread because you would get the Lakers would be on ESPN and TNT all the time. And then you'd get, you know, Milwaukee, Indiana, like you have right now, Orlando, Charlotte, if they ever made the playoffs, would always end up on NBA TV. It's been a strange one.
Well, one, I will say NBA TV, when they started, did send announcers to the playoff games. And in fact, they had 24-year-old Spiro Dedis as their lead voice with Steve Snapper Jones. And they would actually use Round Ball Rock, the NBA and NBC theme, as their theme music.
Right again.
And that was in 2004. By the time Turner came along, they had probably already started to go with local announcers by that point. But I know Bill Raftery did a few for them at some point. I don't know if that was before Turner or after.
I think Ian Eagle did some games as well
for
NBA TV back in the day. But it was always just like a revolving door. You just never quite knew what you were going to get.
Yeah. Well, I mean, one thing I will say is that the future of NBA TV is pretty uncertain. There's been no determination yet made as to whether NBA TV will continue to air live games. That is completely unknown. It seems impossible. How are they going to air live games? You have Peacock Mondays, NBC and Peacock Tuesdays, ESPN Wednesdays, Amazon Prime Thursdays, Amazon Prime or ESPN Fridays, ABC Saturdays, NBC Sundays. But of course, that does not cover the entirety of the season. There'll be plenty of Saturdays early in the year where there's no ABC game. Now, Amazon does have the ability to air Saturday games, but I suspect during the college football season, they might not want to do that. Same thing with Sundays in the NFL, where obviously NBC's not going to start their Sunday package until after the NFL ends. So maybe NBA TV gets plugged in some of those undesirable windows, Saturdays opposite college football, Sundays opposite the NFL, maybe a few Thursdays opposite the NFL as well. I mean, there are openings. I don't know how that'll be done because NBA TV is not going to be run by Turner anymore. Now, the NBA will be paying Warner Brothers Discovery $70 million a year as part of this settlement between the sides to provide content for its various platforms. Maybe that includes NBA game time on NBA TV. Maybe it includes a live game or two. I mean, is it possible that Brian Anderson will be on a WBD-produced game for NBA TV next year? I mean, it sure seems unlikely, but I can't rule it out. I mean, the fact is, Warner Brothers Discovery will be producing content for the NBA. NBA TV is still going to exist, and the league has not decided yet. I mean, it's April 30th that we're taping. And the NBA still is undecided as to whether or not NBA TV is going to air games. So to me, maybe that's possible. No matter what, it's going to be far less of a platform for the NBA than it's been. And that is the trend with league-owned networks across the board. NBA TV, NFL Network, MLB Network, they've all lost important inventory the past few years, whether you're talking about Thursday Night Football or you're talking about playoff games. And obviously the NFL trying to offload NFL Network and the NBA, really hard to say what NBA TV will look like next season.
NBA TV has always felt sort of like the stepchild that we just, we feed everybody else that robust meal, and the stepchild seems to get just some scraps, some leftovers. So I don't know. It's baffling to me though, John, I'll be honest. It's baffling to me that NBA TV has just sort of been left hanging here all this time. And I know the lawsuit and everything happened and the settlement's been reached and we have some level of resolution there with WBD and the NBA. But for NBA TV to just sort of be dangling, it's a really strange thing to me. And I just would want to know from Adam Silver. I haven't even heard anyone speak to him in an interview about what happens to NBA TV. Just a strange thing because there are hardcore fans who watch NBA TV religiously. Now, granted, there may not be that many, but they're there. And I'm sure those fans would like to know what's going to happen to my highlights and my coverage and my documentaries and features and live game action on NBA TV as well. It's something fans do have a right to know.
Yeah, well, we will eventually find out, but it might not be until October, right? The league-owned network is kind of a relic of a certain time. It's not tenable in an era of streaming. It's certainly not tenable in an era of rapidly declining cable distribution. You're not going to see, there was a full primetime NFL package that included Thanksgiving games and Christmas games on NFL Network that the league did not get a rights fee for because it's their own network. It was crazy. You could easily sell, the rights. Obviously, the NFL has discovered that to great success. You can sell the rights for far more than you're making putting it on your own network.
These streamers have made, to some degree, these league-owned networks a bit obsolete when it comes to live games. And Amazon has made its case, and they're singing a loud song, and they're letting everybody know they are in it to win it when it comes to live sports games. And so this is where we are, and fans are going to just have to adjust.
Indeed, they will.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Live on DAZN Worldwide.
Saudi Arabia.
Saturday, May 3rd, 7 p.m. Eastern. Canelo versus Skull. The king stakes his legacy once more for the undisputed crown. Standing in his way is Warrior Skull, undefeated and poised to decimate the division on a knockout weekend of boxing.
Let's make history.
Get Canelo versus Skull, Saturday, May 3rd, 7 p.m. Eastern, live exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/redcircle.
All right, let's talk a little bit more about the NBA playoffs. We'll shift to the ratings conversation. And, it's still early. We're only a week into this postseason. I said last week on the podcast that I felt that the postseason could run aground in the ratings. I still am a little bit skeptical of the remaining field, but Golden State getting those two wins in against Houston last week certainly puts the league in better position, because Houston, Minnesota was not going to draw. Golden State, Minnesota, that could be a very strong draw. It's not going to be Golden State Lakers, obviously, but I think it could move the needle. You get Boston versus New York, Golden State versus Minnesota, and you can live with, Indiana, Cleveland. I do think OKC, Denver could actually be a really strong series as well because of the on-court possibilities. The only dud to me is Indiana, Cleveland, because I don't know that Indiana will be competitive with the Cavaliers. So, that's an okay, that it's not 2023 or anything. That was, you're not going to duplicate that for a while. But I think it's a decent enough set of teams. And if Golden State is for real, I kind of feel like Minnesota probably would be the favorite. They'd have the home court advantage. But if Golden State is for real and you get Golden State into the conference finals, that's huge, obviously. Yeah, you never know what might happen. I know Oklahoma City looked really good in game one against Memphis. They didn't look that good in games three or four against Memphis. I think they're certainly, beatable. And if you were to somehow fall into Golden State getting back to the finals, you go back 3 years, they were in the finals and the ratings really weren't that great now that I think about it. But hey, I'd still take my chances with Golden State over any other team outside of the Lakers.
Yeah, I'm curious, John. You wrote a piece, as you always do on Mondays, and in it you talked about Anthony Edwards and how the mantle of face of the league may be placed upon him, whether he wants it there or not. I am curious what kind of draw he can become What kind of draw is he? What kind of draw can he become? It helps to be in a series against LeBron James, to be in a series against Luka Doncic, to be in a series against the Los Angeles Lakers. But I'm really curious to see what happens with Anthony Edwards. I mean, you got a guy who's been past the first round, so still remarkably young. And of course, there was all this conversation about, is he the next Jordan? And those conversations were premature and quite foolish in many cases. But I would love to be able to track sort of how the public continues to respond to him. I can't help but think of the Kenny Smith quote about how in the regular season, you make your name, in the playoffs, you make your fame. And a guy like Anthony Edwards, to me, is somebody to watch to see how does the public respond to him? How do the networks position the Timberwolves going forward, depending on how far they go? Because it looks like they're going to beat the Lakers. We're taping this and they're going to be tipping off in a little while from the time that we're taping this against L.A. But I'm really curious to see where Minnesota goes and how the public responds to Anthony Edwards and the Timberwolves.
Well, if you go back a year, Game 7 against Denver was the most watched first or second round game on record on TNT, with all the attendant out-of-home viewing caveats. You know, that's not a game that involves LeBron or Steph Curry, right? So to me, I look at that and I say, well, some of that's got to be Anthony Edwards. Some of it was probably Denver, too, defending champs. But, you know, the Minnesota-Dallas conference final started out okay. And as the Timberwolves wilted, so did the ratings. This past weekend, Sunday, Lakers-T-Wolves, Game 4, third most watched first-round game in this TV deal. Again, out-of-home viewing, obviously a big factor there. But people have had an opportunity to watch Edwards play. Now, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make it drink, right? And the reality is that, you know, Edwards is certainly someone who seems like he's got all the ingredients to be the face of the league. But, you know, hey, a face of the league on the level of a LeBron or Steph is rare, or the level of a Kobe Bryant, or the level certainly of a Michael Jordan, obviously, or a Bird or Magic. Those are the faces of the NBA who have been, you know, continuous really for 30 years. Magic and Bird into Jordan, into probably maybe a few years where there was nobody there, then Kobe and LeBron, and then LeBron alone, and then LeBron and Steph. And, you know, frankly, they still are the two faces of the game. It's been pretty continuous with the exception of the early 2000s, and of course the ratings took a hit. Edwards is probably on the lower end of that. I mean, he can't compare to any of those folks I just mentioned in terms of popularity. He probably never will, but it is what it is. That doesn't mean he can't still be the face of the game in this next era. I think, you know, some people have said, well, he can't be the face of the game because of his, you know, his comportment off of the court. And I understand that the way he carries himself in terms of his personal relationships is off-putting, but I think there are far more powerful people than Edwards who have very similar, you know, records. And as long as everything that he is doing is something that he is doing in a consenting relationship, I don't see how that would be a big demerit against him in an era where I reiterate, some of the most powerful people in the country have done the exact same thing as far as, you know, having a reckless amount of children with a reckless amount of women and not being involved with their lives and paying for certain procedures as well. These are all things that, you know, you can look at the very highest echelons of American power and see those behaviors represented. So to me, I don't see that as being a drag on his popularity. It's certainly something, if you're the league, you want to be careful about, because you don't want to end up in a situation where you're hitching your wagon to someone who is so personally reckless that he ends up doing something that could be much more damaging to his image. But, you know, I don't see that as being a huge problem.
You talked about the OKC Denver possibility. That's intriguing as well, because as we talked about last week, the league made a concerted effort to present the Thunder to a larger audience, to basically say, get used to these guys. We're going to start handing you, we're going to start showing you who Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and the Oklahoma City Thunder are, because we want you to get used to them. So I would really be curious. There's something about OKC. I mean, that they're young, but they're dominant and so good. And that Memphis series proved that. But, you know, despite some of the late game performances, you know, they still swept that series. That's another team that I'm just really, really interested in. The NBA's in this fascinating place right now. They're in the hallway. They're sort of leaving one room, going into another room. They're in the hallway right now, and it's really interesting to see where they're going to be going forward as we start to sort of tiptoe out of the LeBron Steph era into somewhat of an unknown. So this postseason is giving us a little bit of a taste of that. Obviously, there are many more dominoes that will fall over the next few years, but some young promising players, maybe not needle movers to the same degree as some of the greats that you've mentioned. But I think that the best way that I can describe where the NBA is, and even in this postseason, in the hallway, waiting for the next door to open.
Yeah, the transition era. You know, the NBA's been here before. They were lucky to have Michael when Magic and Bird went out, and went out prematurely in both cases. Michael went out prematurely as well. Even in the second retirement, that was still premature. That second retirement, they didn't have anybody else, and it was tough because, you know, Shaq and Kobe, you know, Shaq was never going to be the face of the league in that way, and Kobe was too young, and it took probably 6 or 7 years of pretty low ratings, relatively speaking, before you started to see Kobe get back to MVP form, or get to MVP form for the first time in his career. LeBron started to come on. And then you had this great golden era that ran through LeBron and Kobe, LeBron and Durant, LeBron and Curry. And, you know, you head into another uncertain stage as we look at, what, Wembanyama, Edwards, Cooper Flagg hasn't even played a game yet, but people are high on him. It's just going to take time and new stars. And, you know, Luka Doncic, Luka, if he could ever get fit, because, you know, you're starting to see all the things that made a trade sensible, though obviously not that trade. That trade will always be crazy, no matter what problems Luka might have. But a trade, certainly for more assets, you're starting to see. I mean, even in the finals, I mean, when you had Brian Windhorst upgrading Luka Doncic on ESPN, the bloom has been coming off the rose for about a year. But if Luka can ever get into shape and live up fully to the hype, I mean, he could even be a face of the league.
John, is it just me, or do the Celtics just not seem to connect from a viewership standpoint? They don't seem to connect with national audiences. Am I wrong on that?
No, they're bland. They're a very bland team. They don't have a lot of juice to them, and their style of play is offensive to people. I mean, we saw it all year long. People were angry about the 3-point shot. They're angry about it, like it's a personal affront. No team is more dependent on the 3-point shot than the Celtics. And so their style of play, people detest. They're like the Spurs. And the Spurs were the perfect embodiment of the ugly, offensively challenged style of play in the early 2000s. Not the beautiful game Spurs to 2014, the Bruce Bowen Spurs, who were always setting offensive basketball back, you know, 50 years. And that's a direct quote from Greg Popovich. In multiple finals, he said in multiple finals that they had set offensive basketball back 20, 30, 40 years. The Celtics kind of have the same thing, where they embody a style of play that people do not like. Now, it's winning basketball, so they're not going to change it, nor should they. But we saw it in the early 2000s with the Spurs. We're seeing it now with the Celtics. Sometimes winning basketball is kind of ugly. I mean, you can win ugly. We see it all the time in sports, right? You know, the Celtics are a team that this is kind of the version of winning ugly in 2025.
It's almost bizarre to me, as good as they are, as consistently good as they've been for a while now, they still feel under the radar. They feel like this up-and-coming team that doesn't immediately capture your imagination, capture your attention. And it's just interesting to me. Like, they were one of those NBA TV series that you had. Now, granted, they were playing the Orlando Magic, so I understand that to some degree. But it's just like, man, they don't, for a team as good and as familiar as we should be with the greatness of the Boston Celtics, world champions, been in the conference finals, really accomplished over the last few years under the Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown era, they don't seem to resonate. They don't thunder. It's more of a light drizzle.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And for the reasons that I said before, they don't have the personalities for it, which is no problem. I mean, some people aren't boisterous in that way. I'd rather be Jason Tatum in terms of the way he carries himself than Anthony Edwards. But this is about TV. And in TV, you would rather have Anthony Edwards than you would, you know, Jason Tatum is closer to the actor Anthony Edwards from ER in terms of personality than Anthony Edwards, a basketball player. So, look, when all is said and done, winning is the only thing that matters. And if people don't enjoy the way you win, who cares? But if you want to know why the Celtics are not, certainly not the kind of draw you would expect the Boston Celtics to be, well, that's part of it. And you know the other thing, too? We talk about the Boston Celtics as if their 8 straight titles in the 60s matter to anybody under a certain age. I don't even think their 3 titles in the 80s matter to a lot of folks. The domination that they had is less recent than the domination the Chicago Bulls had. And nobody is going out there expecting the Bulls to draw just because they're the Bulls. The Celtics, obviously, they're the most storied franchise in the NBA. But they have not had the continuous success across generations that the Lakers have had. And frankly, even the Lakers, if you're 10 years old, you don't care about the Lakers. You know, when I was a kid, I never saw the Celtics on TV. I mean, the Celtics were in the same category as the Bullets and the Sixers. And if they were on NBC, it was an event. It was like, wow, I finally get to see what this Boston Celtics thing is. Right? I mean, you'd never see them on television. So, I mean, and I'm not particularly young at this point. If you are a kid, the Celtics and the Lakers, they're right there with the Toronto Raptors. Oh yeah, they won a title once. It's not the same kind of mystique.
Come on now, John, you were looking forward to watching Tony Delk and Antoine Walker back in the day, weren't you?
Well, actually I was. And those teams did get on NBC. They did get on national TV because with Jim O'Brien, they made it to the conference finals in 2002 and to the second round in 2003. I'm talking about the Dino Raja Celtics.
Oh, yeah.
Right? You know, I mean, that's a different era.
You're right about that. Touche.
All right, let's talk a little bit more about the ratings from last weekend, but we'll shift gears to the National Football League, the most watched NFL draft ever, if you don't count 2020. And frankly, I don't even think out-of-home viewing is necessarily that much of a factor in this record. I think the numbers were big enough on Friday and Saturday that even without out-of-home viewing, it probably still would have been the most watched NFL draft on record outside of 2020. And all of that is due to Shedeur Sanders and his drop from the first round to the fifth. There is no doubt in my mind whatsoever that that is what moved the needle. You had an 11% increase for day one. That's good. Up 11%, especially when you did well the year before, is great. But then you had increases of more than 40% Saturday and Sunday. That's because you had something you don't usually have on Saturday and Sunday, and that would be a top prospect still on the board. So NFL draft, tremendous number. For Shedeur Sanders, weird attention. You know, I obviously, the world we live in, you have to read what political people say all the time. You have to keep track of what people who cover politics for a living talk about. The NFL draft is so big that people who talk about politics for a living are talking about Shedeur Sanders. It's weird the amount of attention that this kid, I know he's Deion's son, it's weird the amount of attention that he got. non-sports attention, passions, flaring passions.
Mel Kiper online won. But you're right. You're right. I will say this. I struggle with the NFL draft because it's a TV show and the drama never quite feels authentic. It feels contrived to me, feels forced, staged. And I felt a little bit of that watching some of the coverage around Shedeur Sanders. This was a reality TV show. And a lot of bad. I mean, just a lot of ugliness from people surrounding it. Who knows the reasons why he slipped so far? But maybe the question is, why was he even considered at that high a prospect in the first place? There's so many questions you could ask there, but ESPN and the NFL Network, they don't care about those questions. They just wanted the drama. And when you can get that kind of drama, when you can get that kind of storyline and you can just track it, and then not only that, you get this guy continuing to fall. So it imagine, think about this. This went from an NFL draft to a soap opera. Tune in tomorrow to see if Shedeur Sanders will be drafted. Let's get a close up on him. Let's get a shot of him and the family there, sort of waiting, you know, with the anxious and nervous waiting for the call, or maybe there's a post that's about to be made on Instagram about the whole situation. Maybe we'll stream something and go live right now. It became just a show in and of itself. But if that's what works, if that's what draws eyeballs to ESPN and NFL Network, they will take it every single day of the week. This is why Colorado got so many more primetime games over the last year. That's why you got Colorado in positions that some would say the quality and the talent of the team did not really warrant. You get the Sanders name, you get the way these guys market, you get the attention they know how to get. And Deion Sanders can say a lot of things. I don't believe everything Deion Sanders says, to be honest with you, because Deion's always been able to find the camera. He's always been able to draw attention. He may claim that he doesn't want it, but his actions, in my opinion, suggest otherwise. But it has worked for more than 35 years, and it is working even now to the next generation.
Well, you liken it to a soap opera, and Mel Kiper Jr. reminded me of Marlena Evans. He was possessed.
I didn't want to go there, but you took me there. Mel, have a Sanka. Like, what is going on here? What is going on? That kind of behavior, it really does feed into this idea that ESPN is not serious. It's not as serious as it used to be about actually talking sports. I don't know how connected Mel Kiper is to social media, how much he scrolls, if at all, what kind of access he has to the chatter that is happening around the internet. But he came across like a social media influencer, some sort of unhinged, almost incoherent at times, emotional, whining, petulant child. I mean, it was over the top, and Rhys Davis having to be the voice of reason, in some ways almost sort of hinting at Mel to, Mel, calm down, dude. I mean, the situation is what the situation is, but you know what? It worked. That's the thing, John. As awkward as that kind of television can be, it worked. It adds fuel to the fire of the drama of the weekend, and people watch it. Mel Kiper Jr. was almost as big a story as Shedeur Sanders. Now, is Mel Kiper should he actually really be considered with the level of respect that he used to be given back in the 80s and the 90s for his predictions and his assessments of these players? I don't think so. I have no idea how much Mel Kiper really knows about how good these players are and where they should go. But you know what? ESPN, I think, is at a point where they say, we don't really care about that. Like, we can use all of that other stuff as the way to get us to the drama, as the way to get us to essentially a sort of like embrace debate, just in a different form, a cousin of embrace debate. Let's embrace madness. Let's embrace emotionalism, because that is certainly what we got from Mel Kiper Jr. On NFL draft weekend.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, look, I'm not saying that there wasn't an element of a personal animus towards Shedeur Sanders, but I don't know that there was. I can't rule it out, though. It wouldn't surprise me. But, you know, it's also not a death sentence to be drafted drafted in the fifth round. I mean, no one's entitled to be drafted high. I mean, if you want to prove that they made a mistake, you can prove it on the field. It's not that big of a deal.
I agree with you. And the problem with, in my opinion, with Kiper's approach is when you're that emotional and that unhinged, especially as an analyst, I mean, you're not a fan in that chair. You're supposed to be a voice of reason. You're supposed to be a respected voice. You're supposed to be measured. That's what you want in those situations. Now, I know the drama sells, but there is a certain level of respect that you want somebody in that situation. He's supposed to be the be all end all, the know it all. He's supposed to be sagacious and sharp and omniscient when it comes to these players. And so you want to hear that. You don't want to hear the same kind of argument, at least I don't want to hear the same kind of arguments that I would hear on First Take. I want to actually hear somebody be able to explain to me, don't just be emotional about it. Talk about some of the reasons why, calmly, in a measured tone, in a way that doesn't have to attract all this unnecessary attention. Talk to me in a measured way about why these things might happen. Question even yourself. Were we wrong in our assessments of Shedeur Sanders? Were there some things that we did not get right? And you can still have the opinion that you have that he should not have fallen as far as he did. But my goodness, the sideshow that it was, I just felt like it was way over the top.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. Let's shift to another sideshow that is football related, the Bill Belichick situation. And, you know, Bill Belichick, obviously, his relationship has gotten a lot of attention. I would not normally address it because it's none of my business. These are two consenting adults. And even though they're at two different stages of life, they are nonetheless adults. It's none of my business. What's been interesting has been to watch the transformation of people being concerned first that he was taking advantage of her. And now they are concerned that she is taking advantage of him. And this interview that was done on CBS, the Barstool CEO, his name escapes me from him. I'm not trying to be any way. I have such trouble with names. You know, the main guy from Barstool, you know
Dave,
who I'm talking
Dave
about.
Dave Portnoy?
Yeah, thank you. Yes.
Portnoy.
Yes, yes. Dave Portnoy. I wonder if he's related to the guy who wrote the Cheers theme song. But anyway, Dave Portnoy, he pointed this out, and I think he's very correct. CBS Sunday Morning is not some kind of hard-edged news show. It's supposed to be basically relaxing TV. Very rare to have CBS having to put out a press release defending its reporting on CBS Sunday Morning. Think about what CBS is going through right now, all the harassment that they've been dealing with at CBS News, and they have to put out a statement about a Bill Belichick interview that's supposed to be really a pushover interview. That is amazing to me. I'm not going to get into all the details here. The intricacies of their relationship are irrelevant to me, unless Bill is having some sort of issue with age, which is possible at his age. And if that is part of it, then that would be a point where public concern would be merited. Anything short of that, it's none of our business. But since this is a sports media podcast, and because he is the head coach of the North Carolina Tar Heels, and because he is handling this whole circumstance in a very public and ill-advised way, the question really has to become, who steps in here to get this guy to stop being in the public eye?
Yeah, I mean, Bill, where's your PR team? I mean, where's your communications team? I mean, Is she the team? Is Jordan the team? Because if that's the case, the team is failing you, my friend. Failing you. Because as you said, CBS Sunday Morning is as harmless a show as you could possibly imagine. I mean, Mo Rocca doing a report on a friendly cat in Des Moines, Iowa is about as hard-hitting as you're going to get on that show. So something had to happen repeatedly for CBS to go out of its way to make sure the public saw that piece of the interview. But from sort of our lane, it does make you wonder going forward, who is Bill Belichick, the coach right now? And then the other question for media members to ask ourselves is, where are the lines? And I think that's the strange part in all this. Where is the line between this is a personal issue and this is bleeding over into the professional? Where is that line? And I think reporters in Chapel Hill and close by are still trying to figure that out, because typically, I mean, my goodness, go with me here. As successful as Nick Saban was as a head coach, we knew his wife, but we weren't concerned about whether or not she was pulling all the strings from a public relations standpoint and from, I mean, moves that have a direct impact on the team. That concern was not there. We knew Miss Terry. Everybody knows Miss Terry. But the impact, the hands-on influence, people never worried about that. This situation is so unique in that the personal and the professional seem to be bleeding into one another and causing mass confusion. And I think we saw that on full display. And as you said, an absolute sideshow and a spectacle. And I do think we're going to learn something not just about Belichick during this time, but we're also going to learn about reporters during this time as well, because reporters may suspect things, they may think things about what's happening, and because of the nature of this relationship, people are going to want to go certain places they should not go. But we're going to learn about what kind of reporters have integrity here, and to focus on how this affects Belichick as a coach, how this affects the University of North Carolina as a football program. Because if his girlfriend's hands are in all of that, then it becomes a definite media issue, because it could affect everything from access to Belichick to decisions that are made with the program in mind. So you have to consider those pieces.
Yeah, and the North Carolina part of it is a big one, because Belichick doesn't have to be in a situation where he's beholden to anybody. He could easily just have retired. But instead, not only is he beholden to a team, he's beholden to a university. And even though, again, like I said, I'm not digging into any moral questions here, it's none of my business. But I will say, I'm going to take a wild guess and assume that there are no other North Carolina professors or administrators dating a 24-year-old. I'm going to assume, probably a decent bet, that if you went into the UNC, you know, the president of the university is not dating a 24-year-old, all right? So, look, I mean, it's weird. The whole thing is weird. But, you know, with Belichick, people have always bought into the image. Now, I'm not going to make a political statement here. When Belichick endorsed Donald Trump in 2016, that was news. The fact that he endorsed Trump didn't surprise me at all. But the language he used was really surprising. And I think anyone across the political spectrum would have been at that point surprised, because it didn't mesh with what you knew of Bill Belichick. This is kind of similar, where we don't know this guy. All this intense stuff, his gruffness, we don't know anything about him. You know, I mean, look, it is what it is. This seems really out of character for him, but his character is a character.
You make a really good point there, John. The other interesting piece about this from a media standpoint is, here is a man who has spent decades protecting his image, presenting himself as this laser-focused, win-at-all-cost, cutthroat coach who was willing to even let the greatest of all time, Tom Brady, go and then watch him win another championship without Belichick. this kind of a reputation as this football genius, this savant, this guru, this remarkably wise, brilliant football coach who knew who could give you the game backwards and forwards. To see him in this way, it really does make you ask some questions. Not only considering the fact that this is what the championships, the Super Bowls, and all of that, but considering the fact that he has worked so hard to protect his image, to protect how he is viewed, to give media folks very little during press conferences, during post game, and midweek press conferences, to give them very little, to not open up really at all. And then considering the fact, too, that the whole purpose of the interview with CBS was to talk about his book. And in that book, he does not even mention Robert Kraft, the owner of the New England Patriots. So we're peeling back perhaps some of the onions here of Bill Belichick and maybe uncovering some ugly truths that were not previously known or considered because of how tightly Belichick had sort of locked away how the public could perceive him. It was only about football. We're on to Cincinnati, right? Like that was the image. That was the presentation. And now we're seeing something different. The only difference is he's not retired out on the beach. He's not with inside the NFL. He's over a football program who immediately invested so much in him and made him the face, not just of the football program, but of the whole athletics department and perhaps the school. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I'd like to hope the basketball coach still ranks higher at North Carolina, but, you know, look.
Hubert Davis does not rank as high as Bill Belichick. Trust me.
Well, okay, maybe not individually, but the basketball team is certainly more relevant than the football team over there at UNC. Hubert Davis, also someone who's probably not dating a 24-year-old, I'm going to assume. But we'll see. Look, again, it's none of my business. I'm making jokes, but it really is truly none of my business. And none of anybody's business, as long as everyone involved is clear-eyed about what they're doing and making an affirmative decision, though it is bizarre. To say bizarre and seemingly out of character, but again, we really don't know who this character is. All right, that's going to do it for the Sports Media Watch podcast this week. Thanks again to Armand for joining me, and why don't you check out his new column on the site, On the Air. This is a column about announcers and breaking down their styles, their careers, and many other aspects of play-by-play, color, all the positions at sports TV. And the first column is about Robert Griffin III and the way he got sidetracked from his once promising path and now is fighting his way back into sports TV with Fox. So give that a read on SMW and keep listening to this podcast as well, of course. Also, by the way, we had a special episode earlier this week, me and Wim Sweldens of Kisway. Interesting interview about technology and sports and even the potential of AI play-by-play. So give that a listen when you get a chance. All right. Thanks as always for listening to this podcast, and we'll be back with more stuff down the line.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Live on DAZN Worldwide.
Saudi Arabia.
Saturday, May 3rd, 7 p.m. Eastern. Canelo versus Skull. The king stakes his legacy once more for the undisputed crown. Standing in his way is Warrior Skull, undefeated and poised to decimate the division on a knockout weekend of boxing.
Let's make history.
Get Canelo versus Skull, Saturday, May 3rd, 7 p.m. Eastern, live exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com.